Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report.
Ow, 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 ow.
There we go. Beautiful noises from Ken Napsok every week. Mm-hmm. And this week, that was a Toto 360, right? Sounds like he was maybe singing along to Axl Rose. I thought that was pretty great.
I'll take that. You were right about Toto. You know my almost sounds well, and I will absolutely take the sing-along to November Rain.
It was very beautiful. The O-O-O is very Axl-like. Anyway, we never know what strange cultural references may be attached to Star Wars, and this is just the first 30 seconds of the podcast, so you're in for a ride, listeners. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making the wonderful noises is Ken Napsok.
Hello, friends.
So we are here to discuss the Bad Batch television show. Of course, we are talking about episode 9. It is titled Bounty Lost. It is written by Matt Machadnovitz, who is credited almost every week as being the story editor. So it was great to see an episode scripted by Matt. And it is directed by Brad Rao and Nathaniel Villanueva. Content-wise, this is about a 24-minute episode and then 4 minutes of great credits from every place on the earth. If you want to know who is voicing the characters, you can watch those extra 4 minutes. So they've talked a lot about how this is the second half of the show that's been kind of in some tweets from some of the creators. And it was great to get to that big pivotal moment of Omega being captured last week and go into this week, Ken, really wondering, what is the second half of the season going to feel like? What is the launch going to be? How did you feel about that question of, are we launching into the second half?
Big question I wanted to answer. Like, let's, you know, we keep using the foot on the gas pedal type of thing. Not that the show's been slow at all. I've been loving the build. I just, I'm ready to move on. And I think we got it. And again, I don't even know how to explain it well sometimes, but I love when sometimes there's been, in my mind, twice now this season where the show has been like, hey, that thing we were wondering about, hey, there's the answer. Let's keep going. And I love that. I actually really like that. To me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the things that I responded most to in this episode, of that where there was definitely forward movement in the just mechanics of the plot, and also just information, character growth, just forward movement across the board. Mm-hmm. The one thing I wanted to ask you before we got into our overall reactions there, watching this episode, this the second half of the season, kicking off the second half of the season, are you feeling like this season of Bad Batch is going to tell its own complete story and then still leave room open for more seasons? Or how are you feeling about the end game of this season of Bad Batch? Is it going to be a complete story, or is it going to have any sort of cliffhanger element in your mind?
This is a great question. I wonder about this even more than Mando season 3, right? Which is this a brand new Mando within the show? Because I could see it going either way. They're doing such a good job. It's so serialized. We want it, and we feel it's going to be season one. It's its own story. Then how do you take those characters with what they've learned forward more than even just the plot? But there's so many wonderful big questions being asked and then answered, and then which causes more, right? So I sound very vague, like a politician trying to come down on both sides of an issue. But I think this is going to be a contained story. And then we move the characters to other parts of the galaxy.
Yeah, I think this is just going to be the story of Star Wars storytelling for a little while, you know, particularly with the movies and with this animation, the animated shows being on streaming, right?
Yeah.
I think there's going to be this challenge to tell a contained, satisfying story that ends not with a cliffhanger, but with a bunch of characters looking out at the horizon at the possibility of other challenges. You know, the first Star Wars movie ended up doing this really, really well because of the unknown of, is there going to be any more of these movies? That it feels like a very complete story, and you could just kind of headcanon like, yep, and then since the Death Star fell apart, that probably took care of things. Yeah, Vader's still out there, whatever. You know, like, you can view it as a complete story if you want to, the first film.
Yeah.
But it's very much setting you up to go on to this wonderful adventure that we're still talking about over 40 years later. And I think just because of the economics of streaming, we don't really know how Disney Plus is going to look at it. You know, Netflix is really looking at the value of a show is if it draws in new subscribers.
Right.
They kind of don't care if unless it's really winning awards, they kind of don't care if a bunch of people who are already subscribers really love that. They want to draw new subscribers, and we don't yet know how how much Disney Plus might be motivated by that. So I'm really intrigued by all of these creators trying to do a great job to tell one satisfying story and leaving open the possibility, but not creating a frustrating experience for viewers where it's a huge cliffhanger and then there's no season two.
You're raising a very smart, insightful, potentially haunting business aspect to everything that's going on, because, you know, we saw with Clone Wars and they, you know, feel they didn't get to tell the story, and so many things still left on the table, and some being brought back, some in great books, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that's a great question, because what if they were like, God, Mando season two just really didn't, we're good. No more stories, like, and we'd all be like,
could you they need content, but it's a question of which content.
Yeah.
And I just think that's interesting to me too for the films. I don't have any confirmation of this is me having an opinion, but with announcing things like a Rogue Squadron movie set in kind of a new timeline, as they've said, or a new part of the timeline, man, does a Rogue Squadron movie suggest they like, this could be a great movie, and if you like it, then we'll make more. But it is not announcing the Rogue Squadron trilogy, right? They are not committing that much. It's just one movie that could clearly become more movies. And I feel like seasons of new shows on Disney Plus are in that same place of like, yeah, this might go for 7 years. This might be the new thing. Or it might just be one.
Yeah, it always seems crazy now to look back, but up to like season 4 Game of Thrones, they always had to wait for the renewal. And it seems that just seems bonkers, right? But
yeah,
it's the business of it. And I just think we're so this is a wonderful time. We're spoiled with Star Wars riches, but yeah, you don't stop even for the MCU stuff. You don't stop to think of, well, this is still a business and this is still shows and they need subscribers. It's a reality. Haunting, like I said, but I trust we'll be okay.
Haunting, much like this episode. Thank you for taking the time to have that conversation. I think it was just really on my mind as I'm thinking about the rest of this season and that feeling that I'm getting that this is going to wrap up a story and leave them open for more stories, but it's really going to tell its own story, in my opinion. We'll see if I'm full of hooey. But for now, let's talk about this episode, Bounty Loss. Ken, what was your overall reaction? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it? Were you haunted?
Haunted indeed. This is great stuff. They're on a great run. It's been a wonderful season. I keep recommending this show to Star Wars fans who haven't taken the dive into this end of the pool yet. And I will say I'm finding more of them than those who have watched it, which might go to our first points in the conversation. But all that aside, I'll say this, great visuals, right? We always say show's beautiful. No, just great visuals and the aesthetics all the way through this episode. The choice of the abandoned cloning facility. I wrote, and I didn't know we were going to go into haunting stuff today. I wrote both familiar and haunting. Like, it was so, the glory of the Kamino cloning facilities in another part of the world, another part of the galaxy. And it really did have a little horror vibe at times. So I really enjoyed that. We can talk that. But also going to the big reveal, I'll say first, the big reveal around Omega in this episode, it kind of became less and less surprising as the show went on, right? But I love that. And I think we, and this goes back a ways, and I've been a part of this. We've talked about it. It's the Plagueis staff factor of it all. I do think we can get so hung up on theories and predictions, which are so fun and will continue to fuel a lot of the excitement for shows. But I just sometimes love that when the answer that made sense and the answer we get is it's the one. It's like, yeah, that's it. Because the why of the reveal is always more important, as we know. And I even think the reveal is more important for the characters than it is for our podcast, dare I say. And this episode scratched that itch.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think that this was such a satisfying answer to this question that I really think they were trying to play fair on. They weren't trying to make it too mysterious or too weird of like, what is Omega's superpower? Does she actually have all the powers of all the Bad Batch clones? Like, they weren't trying to play it up too much. It was all really coming from character and from nuance. And I think this revelation that she is genetically valuable because she is a first generation unaltered clone and the last possibility of making more pure Jango clones is, or the last with Boba Fett, we'll get to that, of course, it's powerful to me because it affects her as a character. It possibly affects Boba Fett, which we'll talk about, but everything about it is just sort of moving on a character level and on a thematic level, which we'll also get into. I won't pontificate on that now because that was one of the things that was really powerful about this episode to me is that reveal wasn't just here's an answer to the mystery. It was the kind of the core of what the episode was about to me.
I was excited that was it. Could there have been other possibilities? But yeah, we're going to talk about that. But hey, I love to. We got tech, Mr. Wikipedia giving us the answer. Final thing for me, and I'll kick it back to you, sir. The Fennec Shand aspect, Fennec Shand is great. I love what they're doing with Fennec Shand. But I tell you what, this just gets me hungry for more Fennec Shand content. I definitely can't wait to spend more quality time with her in the sense of, you know, how true is her heart? How cold is her heart? Ming-Na Wen has some great layers in what she's doing. Some somber notes are in the voice of, you know, reflections of some other experiences, reflections of lessons learned or directions maybe she felt her life had to go. So far, the presentation of her is wonderfully on the surface, meaning I want more. And is Book of Boba Fett the show that does that? I don't know. Do we need Book of Fennec Shand? Maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Book of Boba Fett is going to be definitely a two-hander in terms of being both Boba Fett and Fennec Shand's story. It seems like our friend Ash Crossan had a great interview with Ming-Na Wen that I watched yesterday, and she was talking about Ming-Na Wen was mentioning, like, you know, the show is about the relationship between Boba and Fennec, and I can't say anything more than that. So it already seems that way. I also think, like, it for me, what I'm enjoying about this is I feel like this is we're seeing a character in the Bad Batch of Fennec Shand who is open to the possibility of connection and kindness, maybe, but that's not what she's leading with at all. She is being a brutal bounty hunter, doing what needs to be done, proving herself. And that sets up really great to see this character who still has all of that acumen and that possibility for coldness, but has now gone through a near-death experience, is bonded with another person who went through a near-death experience, and is maybe approaching things with more honor and connection than they used to in their youthful days that we're seeing in Bad Batch.
Yeah, and definitely has no problem with Bib Fortuna being killed.
Absolutely none. I mean, I feel like Bib has probably done some real a-hole things.
I think he's earned it, yeah.
I don't. Bib was literally not a stand-up guy when they shot him because he was sitting down, but I don't think Bib is a stand-up guy.
Not yet.
Yeah, I mean, he should have been out there helping his relative Beezer, but no, just let Beezer rot. Anyway, back to this episode. I really like this episode. Each episode is really connected, building on itself, but having this great sort of a tonal variety in a certain way. I was really thrilled that this one just picked up directly from last episode. It gives it this serial adventure vibe where if you set up a big challenge, a big conflict, a cliffhanger up to a point. I really like just picking up like, look, we need to find Omega. We're racing away. We're being chased by Crosshair. It's one problem into the other problem. Absolutely love that. And then, like we were saying, I think this whole episode had this sense of forward movement because it was literally the cliffhanger from last week. Omega trying to figure out the problem. Bad Batch trying to figure out the problem. And then also these big reveals and some of them I wouldn't even call reveals. I would just say concrete clarifications. So we absolutely understand who are the players on the board and what do they want. So it feels like the big picture story is moving forward too. And then on top of that, this episode is just the one where Omega escapes. They, in fact, even make it clear from the title, Bounty Lost. So it also doesn't feel like that. This is that four episode arc that's so great, but Omega's captured for so long and it's four episodes. Like, no, this show has its foot on the gas. It is changing the situation and moving forward. So I really love the forward movement aspect.
I'm right there with you on again, when she kind of got out, and again, the episode hadn't ended. I don't know if she could have been recaptured, but I had that thought too of just like, yeah, I'm good. I'm glad we don't have week after week of trying to break her out or anything. And I didn't expect we would, but it goes to the wrecker head reveal of just finally like, yeah, yep. All right, there we go. That's what it is. Just something about it that, like you said, this forward momentum is really grabbing me.
Yeah, I think it's because for me, there's been so many great shows in genre in streaming. And like, I really love many of the Netflix Marvel shows. But those were 13 episodes, and there were sections of them that would really drag. That was a thing that I think stopped people from enjoying a lot of the great things about them. And I'm just loving that Bad Batch is got its big picture stories that it's doling out slowly, but then each episode, whatever adventure is started, is generally completed. You know, it's the one where they capture a Rancor, the one where they get their chips out, the one where Omega gets captured, the one where Omega escapes, and like those little stories are completed within the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, right there with you. And it's interesting too. If like we've become so conditioned to these shorter seasons, right? And Bad Batch, we know, is going for a little bit, midway point, like we thought last week. It's so funny to just your conditioning of it's episode 9. Who's gonna die? And what are we doing in the series finale, season finale next week? It's just like my muscle memory takes over, and it's like, oh, we've got the time.
Yeah. The other big picture thing for me, and then we can dive into some themes, is I just thought that this episode had some good variety. There was a tonal variety in that this series has been very comedic, and there's definitely some funny comedy moments, but way less comedy in this episode, and a lot more action than in some of the episodes, and just a lot of horror, a lot of dread. We say every week that this show is beautiful, and I think episodes like this are really celebrating the technical capacity of the animation has advanced, but it feels like the artistry has, technical advances are great. They're tools, but tools still need to be wielded by humans, and they're using fog is this show's best friend this episode. They just used the hell out of fog to get that sense of dread and that sense of the unknown and that sense of horror. So it is just great to see that tonal variety that the technology is allowing them to make the episodes kind of have different and rich tones.
Yeah, the fog kind of a star of this episode, right? I mean, it's definitely present, and I had the thought of just like, you know, Fog clearly was in the Clone Wars at some point. You know, Dagobah looked foggy, but it just was used so well, and that aesthetic all the way through, it just worked for me in so many ways. And you're right. So the show's been beautiful. And obviously that can go to the big sweeping vistas and planets and action and close-ups and rack focuses between characters. But this had just as much, and it wasn't clear. You couldn't see through the fog. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Last thing for me overall is just, I like the variety and focus too of like Omega has often been a huge part of the Bad Batch, but we've always stayed a little bit more with the Bad Batch. And the Bad Batch, the older clones, were not the focus. This was Omega's episode. And it was one of the things I was hoping for last week, that if this episode was the tale of Omega, getting away from Cad Bane, that it would at least be partially Omega herself escaping, as well as the Bad Batch trying to find her. And I was delighted that most of it was Omega being resourceful, getting herself out, but also needing the Bad Batch in this great Star Wars tradition of the individual is important and the group and the connection is important. I felt like it really followed through on that, but it was great to have an episode where we mostly spent time with Omega and watched her follow the squad rules. If you get in trouble, use your comm.
Yes. Yes.
Good rule follower, that Omega. All right, let's dive into the big themes and ideas. What did you feel like was at stake in this episode, Ken?
What was at stake was, we're going to get into a big one, I think, of personal value, but I want to talk about the honorary Finn theme of alone together. You even touched upon it. It's been what's going on, the group and the individual and the power of both. And on display all through this episode was what I would call the power and often need of taking care of yourself. Fennec says it kind of has a cynical view on it, saying the exact quote I did write down because it was pretty good. They won't get here in time. Speaking of the Bad Batch, the only person you can rely on is yourself. And mm-hmm. probably proven that to herself time and time again. But Omega, you know, once resourceful and skilled, self-rescuing kind of hero here in this episode, but needs her friends and is longing for the new friends and connection she's made and the power of that. And the flip side of Toto 360 doesn't have the support and connection he wants, lying to himself about how Cad Bane treats him. And I thought great comedy from that, real good comedy stuff from Toto, but driving that point home of when you're alone, these things happen, and how Cad Bane treats Toto affects the overall success of their mission and those kind of things, and how well you work together and how well the individual can stand on their own. All big themes that we've been dealing with all through this show, but it really popped for me in this one.
Yeah. And big Star Wars themes as mm-hmm. well. But yeah, I think that connection between Omega and Toto, it is so much more than just the practical plot of how does mm-hmm. Omega escape? She manipulates Toto. It is so much about what their relationships are with their respective parental figures.
Yeah.
older buddies. I don't know exactly how you would say that. But yeah, I am totally with you on that one. I think that there was a lot about, as you're saying, what is a person's value? That was definitely reflected in Toto 360. We even got to see that even Omega, in her need to manipulate Toto 360, is kinder, right? Like, she does actually fix his leg. And then when she does knock him out, says, sorry, it's only temporary, to make it clear that she's valuing him more than his cruel master. Yeah. But I thought so much of this idea of what is a person's value was so focused on Omega. It's what I think you and I were both thinking about when we're talking big picture about the reveal of the fact that she is a first generation clone and is carrying this ability to make more direct DNA clones of that direct Django source. Mm-hmm. But everything then about it, almost every character's motivation is in how they see Omega, what makes her valuable. And we get everything from she is valuable because of her financial value. She is valuable because of her genetic makeup. And then, of course, she's valuable for her actual humanity and skills. And I loved how much the characters just kind of baldly stated that.
Yeah.
There's that moment where Cad Bane, who is really flavorful and spicy this episode, he said, how's my asset doing? My name is Omega. You know, that cues you in right away that that's what we're doing here, is we're asking that question of, you know, what is her value? we, of course, see that Bane's only in it for the credits. That's all he cares about. You were talking about this. Fennec seems like there is a possibility she could care about Omega. Mm-hmm. But we also learn that in this particular adventure, she's only keeping Omega safe because she's being paid to. But you're so right. In Ming-Na Wen's performance, there is a little bit, it's open to interpretation. But she does just directly say to Cad Bane, you of all people should know it's all about the price. Again, attaching Omega's value to being financial. And then I think one of the great things about this episode, of course, is that we learn that there is some divide on Kamino. That Lama Su wants Omega for her value to the cloning operation and says, recover our property. So there we have another noun. We got asset, property, price. And then this great discovery that Nala Se has made a genuine connection with Omega, and her value is more her humanity. Yeah. I think Bad Batch, we know that they see Omega as a person, as a clone, as a soldier, as one of their unit, as one of them. They see her as in all these different ways as a person. But this episode, I think, really reinforced like what Hunter has kind of been saying of like, I can't really focus on what the Bad Batch should be, what the unit should be in terms of are we mercenaries, arms dealers, soldiers. We're caregivers for Omega. That's our mission now. In this episode, seemed to really, really highlight of that's Hunter's mission is to keep Omega safe. Period.
Yeah. Up top, you really hit on something I love. It's just like you have Omega's value and different views of that value, and you really do have this. All roads lead to Omega, and it's all different paths. And the Cad Bane line, which was also just a funny line in a way, but really telling, really cutting, and everything with, like you said, with Omega and the Bad Batch. Yeah, it's about that. And the connection breeding care, and Nala Se and everything. I think ties in some bigger picture, especially with what's going on and always has been going on with the Empire. And I think that all factors into as well. But the finding your value thing really inspired me in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was absolutely great. What are some other ideas or themes that you wanted to pluck out of this episode?
Well, if I may, I'll spin it off a little bit from finding your own value.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so it's pretty cut and dry in some ways. Omega is facing who she truly is. And I love when Star Wars, you can take some of these themes and start applying them to your own conversations around your own life or your own path. And I feel all of this ties into this idea of Leia saying that you never be afraid of who you are. And Omega is not quite there yet because she's just really, truly learning. And there's always kind of that life lesson of knowing your worth, and accepting nothing less, right? Like relationships, jobs, podcasts, whatever it is. Knowing your worth is a very important part of life and who you are, what you're capable of, and what's inside that people need or are aware of that makes you special. And that can be a very positive thing. But I love this episode is haunting. And this information, she's scared. And it's never easy, I think, in life when you really find out who you are, because then people do, just like you're describing, Joseph, people have different reactions to that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a great cook. Oh, I need you to cook for me. Oh, you think you're so good. You think you're so smarty, all those kind of things. And there's a burden to it, and people can come after you for it. And sometimes you want to run from it. And Omega is faced with this one truth, and I boil it down to you are very special. We'll dive into the canon connections and the bigger things at stake, but you are very special, right? That's a positive way. It's a greeting card way to say it. But that's a lot of ramifications that she has to face or deal with. And that great shot of Omega's reflection in the tube and what she says about that, what she doesn't want to be, and knowing where you come from, was something that Rey dealt with. And that's why I think it all ties to that. And we're not done. It's just starting here. And that's the last 5 minutes. The Michelle Ang delivery and some of those Omega lines was heartbreaking, but inspiring once you really kind of discover, here's who I am. Choice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love what you're saying here. And I think it connects really directly to Rey's journey in Rise of Skywalker in particular, her whole journey, but it's put on the table in Rise of Skywalker very clearly. But it's also what Kylo's dealing with from his first scene in Force Awakens, right? Of Lor San Tekka saying, I know the truth of who you come from. You can't deny the truth of your family. He's like, you're so right. And there's that pressure of like, are you identified by these heroes? These royalty to Lor San Tekka of Luke and Leia, maybe Han. I don't know if Lor San Tekka thinks Han is royalty. Kylo scene. It is the Vader, and even goes back to, you know, Yoda talking to Luke about his burden. I was really thinking about that when you're talking about the burden of discovering who you are, because you know different people are going to have different opinions and different expectations because of who you are or who they perceive you to be based on some truth. And, you know, Yoda is saying, like, no, it's not bad that you know the truth, Luke. It's bad that you weren't prepared for the burden of knowing the truth of your lineage, of who you are. So I love what you're saying here. And I really kind of thought of that under the umbrella theme of the dark truth. That this is an episode where it really did feel like, Omega's not a Jedi, but it had that sort of mystical feeling. It had that mythic feel because it was really kind of plunging into this dark, scary, almost dreamlike environment and being faced with the darkest version of the truth of you, right? Mm-hmm. Like this revelation could have been on a bright, sunny planet where Tech had done some deeper Wikipedia reading on her file and said, hey, I'm telling you this in a beam of light and I'm saying, look at who you are and where you came from, you know, but that's not the way the story is told. It's told in this, let's plunge into the depth. This is the dark truth, right? I feel like it's powerful that the setting reflects this, right? This is a brand new planet, according to Wikipedia, Bora Vio, and it's this great settlement, or not settlement, outpost, alternate outpost of Kamino. But just the way it's designed that she's like, I kind of recognize this because it's my home. It's the same door pads. It's the same doors, but it is the dark version of it. It almost seems like the true version of it. Like when you cut back to the beautiful glowing white in Lamassu is like, she's property. And once we get her, kill her.
Yeah, well,
you know, put her in the basement. And it makes Bora Vio feel like this journey through this station, this outpost for Omega is, this is what my home has always looked like, but I didn't see it because they covered it up.
I really love that. I don't mean this even jokingly, but to go to Dexter Jetster and just like cloners and good ones too, just implies there's a lot of cloning going on and a lot of bad cloning going on. And Kamino, they've perfected the art and it's beautiful hallways that it's breeding an army for the Republic, all those things that, you know, and the darkness underneath. Creating life and the questions around it and well, bigger stuff that, you know, Omega's not necessarily even dealing with it, but it was so, it's our word of the day, haunting. It really was effective, especially that little look in the reflection.
Absolutely. Cause it really is her facing the, you know, the dark truth of her heritage. There's really connections to Skywalker Saga storytelling. If you think of, the cloners is the family unit of the Kaminoans is the family unit that she has known, right?
Yeah.
That to see the gross and upsetting clones in the vat and then to see her face. And then I really like that it was echoed at the end. I didn't even mean that. By Echo saying, Hunter, you have to tell her. It gives it this extra weight that like Echo knows this is kind of a hard thing to process, right?
Yes.
And that there's that instinct that Echo can see in Hunter's eyes to maybe be like, yeah, I don't need you to know that people see you as property and you're wanted because you're a pure version of a dead bounty hunter. and yeah, like you said, I really wanted to highlight her line of I don't want to end up an experiment in a tube. Mm-hmm. All of it was in what is happening. Thematically, what is actually happening plot wise and just the actual visual, this was the whole thing was so reminiscent of Empire Strikes Back to me. Obviously just the establishing shot of the outpost is very, very Bespin, right? The mist and the fog is very, very Dagobah, and there's one shot in this episode, there's many shots where scary people come out of the mist. But there's a shot of Omega, it's very short, backing up as Bane comes out of the shadows, and it is extremely similar to the shot in the Dagobah tree cave of Luke backing up as Vader comes out of the mist. Right. It really connected those, not in any sort of canon way, but in an emotional way of that's what's happening to Omega. She is seeing this horrible truth and has to process what it means to her.
Great pull. The motifs, right? Good old Star Wars motifs and aesthetics and what it makes you feel. These sense memories we have as fans for previous things we've watched. I think that's great. Can I jump in on something? Talk about the Please. Echo line. And you and I were talking up top. There's obviously going to be a lot of videos and debate and discourse, both positive and negative and all the way in between about the connection to Boba Fett. We'll dive into it as well. We're not here to comment anyone's thoughts on it. Either way, we're dealing with what we saw in this episode. And one of the reasons the stuff you and I were talking about up top of how it matters to the characters more than us. Echo's line really, really was effective for me in the sense of it's not just information. You've got Hunter. It's her. It's her life. It's her knowledge of what's going on. She needs this, even though it's tough, the burden, all those things. It was a great line, great delivery. Love that little moment.
Absolutely. And I think it pays off because she has before been restless to get off Kamino to go explore the world, right? In the galaxy. And then in the pilot, obviously, there's some not great stuff happening on Kamino. But this is the first time where she now never wants to go home, never wants to go back to the place that she grew up and is the only place that she has ever known, right? There are ramifications for her knowing the full truth. And the fact that this episode ends on a promise that they never have to go back to Kamino is really showing her sort of acceptance and beginning to process the fact that maybe I come from a dark place. What does that mean for me? Well, I don't want to be that dark person.
Yeah. Yeah.
The final thing for me, you touched on this, but I thought it married well with everything else. There's this kind of sort of deeper mythic dark truth, find out who you really are. And I thought the Toto 360 stuff, played as comedy and it played as a bounty hunter commentary, but it really dovetailed with Toto also can see the dark truth that Bane does not give a bleep about him, but also just won't accept it. You know, the line, well, Mr. Bane is very busy to talk about. He's just sitting in the cockpit. He's very busy. You know, it's a good laugh line, but it is a good contrast to Omega, to who is looking at the hard truth and processing the hard truth, and Toto, who will not look at the truth.
Yeah. I think you said well played, Seth Green. Great job with Toto. But yeah, that line particularly, there's a lot of, when Omega helps him, it's sweet for Omega, but it was really, I was sad for Toto. It's not a good life you got. There's so many droids in the galaxy living good lives, man. You deserve better, Toto.
Yeah. I mean, go join the early rebellion, Toto. You know, who knows? Toto's on Andor too. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, he's around a tree.
They're all around trees. It's great.
He was pulling that first rope on the biker scout. You just didn't see him.
With two repaired legs. We talked a little bit about how these themes that are unique to this episode really reflect the larger storytelling morality perspective of Star Wars. But other big ideas there for you?
In terms of, with the bigger galaxy, the last one I mentioned was the connection breeding care, which is the Nala Se stuff. And I say this, I think the episode ends, you get a pretty good idea of Nala Se. And there's like 2% of my brain that's like, jury's still out. I love everything going on in Kamino because I fear for them as a people, as a species. But I also am upset with them a little bit right now, but not Nala Se. So anyways, all that to say, connection breeding care. And you can't deny that she's grown to care about Omega, and how that is viewed as such a negative, right? Your personal interest in the young clone have threatened our operation enough. And that ties directly into some of the bigger lessons in Star Wars, but the Empire, we know, doesn't value these connections. We harp on that stuff all the time when talking about the Empire or the original trilogy era of Star Wars. The Empire doesn't want you to connect with others because that you form dangerous feelings, such as, not limited to, love, sympathy, empathy, compassion, care, concern, community, and purpose.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I said no one in power wants that in Star Wars.
No, exactly. Because, if the people band together too much, they're a threat. We can't have connection. That's a threat.
More
to our power, our money, our unlimited money and power. Yeah, I think definitely the alone versus together was really crisp, really great in this episode. if I pulled out that Fennec Shand line as well, that the only person you can rely on is yourself, and everybody else is having these sort of dysfunctional relationships and conflict within themselves. And beyond bickering, the Bad Batch is united. And it's, you know, it's nice and literal. It is literally Omega and the Bad Batch on either end of the galaxy trying to literally make connection with one another. And it is that that saves them. You know, it's not like Wrecker going like, here's where Duros's weak spot is on the neck. Shoot for that. You know, it's the victory is connection.
Yeah. The victory is connection. That's a, that is a great t-shirt. There you go.
The other big thing for me that popped is in terms of like large Star Wars theme is just this idea of generational change. And it is everywhere in the Bad Batch television show, I think, because it has been doing this great job of showing us these this generational shift in the entire galaxy as the Empire takes over. But there's what's going on in this episode is Lamassu is basically desperate to say, like, no, nothing can change. No new technologies. You can't have, you know, stormtroopers. You got to have clone troopers. And in order to make that not happen, I need to get this kid back. But Omega then herself becomes this symbol of the next generation. Hope for clones, maybe hope for the Bad Batch, but just definitely a symbol of youth coming in. And that, the fact that that was really, really echoed with the relationship between Fennec and Cad, right?
Yeah.
That this was called out between Cad Bane of like, I am the old experienced guy. I've heard your name ringing out, kid, but you can't step to me. Yeah. And then Fennec, for the first time ever, like Cad's got his butt kicked a little bit by Jedi. Mm-hmm. But this was like Fennec walking over old man Cad, right? Like it was a great bounty hunter fight and they both got their licks in, but it could have been framed as two great bounty hunters go toe to toe and they both get in hits. Yeah. But there was something about it that just really made me feel like this is that first moment where maybe Cad Bane has this moment of like, I can't be the best bounty hunter forever. Mm-hmm. This younger person really put me through my paces.
Yeah, it's the fastball just zipped by him and he didn't catch up like he used to. 100% to Ken Random Sports reference, right? Yeah, no, and I really felt that. I felt that when the first kind of explosion goes off and he thumps up against the wall and doesn't pop right up. Yes, he also took a, you know, basic explosion to the face, but I love that because when it starts, I would say, like you said, he's heard the name. There's maybe some respect on the concept of the name, but there's no respect really present from Cad Bane. And had just, he's kind of like, just give me the money. Get out of here. It's me. I'm Cad Bane. I got the hat. Come on. Give me the money.
Exactly. And then it doesn't go so well. I mean, ultimately, like the fight is relatively even, but for how much they've built up Cad Bane over the years as unstoppable. He's taken it to Obi-Wan and, you know, and yeah. Quinlan Vos and all number of badasses and held his own. And then this really had a, like, I'm not swinging quite as fast and my back hurts.
Yeah.
Vibe to the fight. While still keeping him a badass.
Yeah, I heard a rumor James Mangold is directing Old Man Cad, and it's going to be great.
If Cad lives that long, which we'll talk about in a bit. Any other big thoughts on the themes or stakes of the episode?
The big final one, just this going back to the idea of we talked about the value and what specifically Omega learned about herself. And I just, it's such a Star Wars thing, right? About knowing your origins. And it continues to be an important thread in Star Wars. But I think I'm pretty sure you lead the way there as well, Joseph, of just what you do and where you go with that knowledge of your origins is really a series of big choices. And it's always more important than what it actually is. And it could be either way. You could find out who you are and that confirms thoughts and you go that direction, or a lot of the bigger stuff with Rey, Kylo, all those things we keep going with. Luke, twin sons and learning stuff. No, my father was a navigator and a spice freighter. Learning your origins is important to Star Wars, but that's not the end of the journey. In fact, it's only the beginning. And Omega and the Bad Batch continue to face those big discoveries and choices every week, which continues to be part of the more inspirational and intriguing parts of the show.
No, I totally agree. And that's even there with Anakin. And I think we sometimes forget that because we're so used to thinking of Anakin and Vader as sort of like the center of the Skywalker saga up to a point. But, you know, he starts out as a slave, you know, yeah. A little nobody kid on a backwater planet. And, you know, he still becomes something else. He becomes a couple of something else's.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like the story in Star Wars of face your past. A lot of times there's going to be darkness in it. But then once you get to know your past, once you get to understand your past, then you choose your future. And that was really facing the dark past, I think, was what this episode was about, and really looking forward to. We're not going back. We're not going to Kamino. Where are we going next? Who are we going to be?
The belonging you seek. Oh, wait, I've heard that before.
Exactly. Is not on Kamino. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to dive into moments of action, comedy, and canon, and talk all the Boba Fetts, all the bounty hunters that could be. We'll be right back.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of Bad Batch Episode 9, Bounty Lost. Ken, there's a lot of action in this episode. Did you have a favorite action moment or two?
I did. I'm going to start small. It's also comedy, but I'm going to start small because I think I've developed a little, I don't know, care, concern. I want better for Toto. I don't know if he 100% deserves it. He's made some choices himself in life, but I want better for Toto. I'm going to give him credit. I love when he sweeped in and grabbed the score. And then I also love when he lost it. the leg sweep she does on the explosive, everything. Great. A lot of great leg sweeps, kicks, and all the stuff from Fennec. But I just love that Toto had this, I got it, boss. I did well. Oh, and then when the money just falls out, again, probably more comedy whimsy, but it was an action moment for me, an action moment for Toto.
No, I put it in my list of action moments, too, because not only it's that moment where Cad thinks like, yeah, I got this. And like, Fennec's like, no, I'm aware of the distract me and throw a bomb at me trick. I've seen that one before.
Yes.
Even though I'm young and does the great, cool kick. And that would be cool. That would make my list by itself. But then the fact that it blows Toto out the window in the utter pain of the credits falling. Those are imaginary unmarked credits from an imaginary galaxy, Ken, and I still had an instinct of like, grab a bucket, you can still catch them. Don't let that money fall.
Yeah, I'm not a crypto coin person, but for fun, I invested in a little bit, and that was me holding the credits and watching as it just fell out, and I didn't understand what I was holding. Yeah, I felt like Toto, too. So.
Watching them fall into an unknown environment below, but probably not a friendly one. Yeah, that's great. So that was on my list. First thing for me on my list was just the sound of Cad Bane's double LL-30 blasters. That I went to Google it because I was like, I think Cad Bane's blasters are unique. I'm not sure. I'll Google it. And when I just put in Cad Bane, Google offered up, you know, Cad Bane's ship, Cad Bane's hat, and then Cad Bane's blasters sound. So I know I'm not alone. That's a thing that people Google. It's just that high-pitched, abrasive, you know, just really dynamic sound. Is like just the sound of the blasters was thrilling me.
Alone together, indeed, on that search. I love that. Yeah, and right there with you. I mean, you know, we're this is the thing, the little things we love about Star Wars, the sounds, the Ben Bird of it all, and it still shows up, and it's the standard he set in 77, and when something just kind of scratches that itch, it absolutely, you're going to do a Google search.
Yeah, absolutely. So a sound that makes you Google search is a good sound. What other moments of action did you enjoy?
I particularly enjoyed Omega, and she's kind of trying to escape, but just sizing up kind of what she could do, and then jumping on Toto and kind of riding him down as a little power lift, a little repulsor lift. I thought that was a great little smart bit of action, fun, cute in its own way, but also so effective.
Yeah, and then pretty brutal. Like, I think a lot of this episode was meant to make you feel some sympathy for poor Toto, the way he ended up on his head in a way that can't be good for his neck.
No. And yeah, I got little neck problems every now and then. I was like, yeah, I was doing the stretch.
Oh, yeah, I did some cracks. Yeah. A couple other for me. I really liked the Bad Batch's urgency to find Omega. And I loved that their ship, the Havoc Marauder, did what would appear to be an unnecessary twirl as they turned around and jumped into hyperspace once they had her location. It was just one of those moments where, for me, like, we know the famous Anakin spinning is a good trick, and then even his grandson doing that in The Last Jedi. Like, look, spins are fun. They're great. But it really connected to me of like, hey, remember when we get caught up in the details and the explanation and the physics, like a lot of things in Star Wars happen because they're cool and fun, particularly visually, you know?
Yeah.
This is always going to be a galaxy where TIE fighters scream in space, in the vacuum of space. And I love it when I see one of those details of like, I'm sure there might be a reason in some, you know, ship manual that like, oh yeah, three spins is really good if you're heading this direction in hyperspace. Right. But just watching it is just like, they're so anxious to find Omega. They had to do three spins before jumping into hyperspace. It's so cool.
Look, man, if I'm flying around the galaxy in a cool ship, and a lot of cool ships in this episode and season, I've been spinning left and right.
Yeah. You got to spin to find your friends, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. one of the ones I loved, I wrote it down as dueling headbutts.
I wrote the exchange of headbutts, but I think dueling headbutts is better.
it's a great B-side there of a banjo album. Cad Bane's gets the classic one in for it. I enjoy a good classic headbutt, but Fennec comes in with just a sweet. We talk about generational change in headbutts, Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, like, did she invent headbutt uppercut?
Yeah,
that's what she did.
It's a head cut, an upper head cut. Yeah, yeah. It was great.
An up butt. She did an up butt, clearly. Yeah. Oh, I take that back. Anyway, I'm such a great call that, like, and I think that had that feel too to Cad Bane of like, look, kid, you haven't been around. You don't know the tricks. You think we're fighting with arms and legs. Head butt, and it works. And then she's like, no, I know that one.
I snake up and then. Upper head butt.
I'm gonna stop now.
Okay.
Excellent. I think the exchange of headbutts, the dueling headbutts, beautiful, beautiful. One of the other ones that I enjoyed the most because it was kind of a moment of action amidst the horror is when Omega drops the vat of clone on Fennec Shand in the gross, wet, what looked like to me a clone of a Kaminoan flopped out.
Yeah.
That was like gross and effective. And if that had been any species from Star Wars, if that had been, you know, a proto Snoke, that would have been great, probably distracting.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about it is, you know, Omega's being resourceful, Fennec Shand being grossed out. But the story that I've heard from behind the scenes is that a part of the invention of the Kaminoans is let's bring that real classic 50s. You know, what the little gray aliens allegedly look like, but let's make them taller. But we're definitely building on that real 50s, is this what aliens actually look like vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And this, that image of that naked, gross Kaminoan flopping on the floor really took me to like 90s X-File alien autopsy. And it just kind of connected the in-world action to kind of the behind-the-scenes genesis of the Kaminoans.
I loved it. Smoky Man is in the corner with a theory. I wrote down Fennec's grunts of disgust being covered in the clone because it was very live action. Like, I also watched this at 5 a.m. today, so I, you know, could have been a little blurry-eyed. It almost like I felt like Ming-Na Wen was on screen. Not an animated version of her. It was a really good little disgusting, no disrespect to that clone. Just, I felt it.
Yeah, it was very visceral of a wet, a disturbing clone falls on you.
Is that what you watch with the subtitles, right? Is that what it said? Wet, disturbing clone falls on you?
No, I don't. I think all the noises were from Fennec, not from like splooshing of clone or anything like that. I got one more. How about you? You got any more?
Just one little one for me. A lot of action all the way through. And sometimes you just want to focus on something that grabs your attention. I like flame throwing Bane, and I'm sure he's probably used that before, right? Nothing pops to mind. Again, watching this early in the morning for me, I just kind of went, hey, flames. And I really enjoy a good flamethrower in your wrist.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that too, because it did seem like fun and tactical, like he finally got enough distance between himself and Fennec, and it was not taking any chances. So out come the flames. And then that was followed up then by that great moment of Cad Bane getting kicked off the platform and getting to see his jet boots and his real, real upset groans and snarls.
Yes.
As he has to get back up there. And the way he flopped over the edge, right? Like in the Clone Wars, there's moments where his jet boots are like, ha ha, you weren't ready for that. I'm so slick with my jet boots. And this is like, my jet boots barely saved me and I could barely climb over this ledge.
Yeah, he does.
Cad Bane's getting too old for this bleep.
He does this really tired, exhausted Fosbury flop. Like he's doing the high jump or whatever. And just like, man, I felt it. That's why you tied to this generational change you talked about. That's the big theme, but I felt that in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That it was a great moment of action because it was cool. And it was also like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
Another one of these. God. On my back. Great stuff. Any more action or should we move on to comedy?
No, comedy indeed.
Yeah. So do you agree with me that there weren't as many moments of comedy?
There was some great moments, great character moments, even the big reveal, you said confirmation, I think that's a better word, but the reveal of the Boba Fett stuff is just Wrecker being like, what does that mean? Like, it's funny because it's Wrecker.
Yeah.
I'm there for it. I'm more and more Wrecker than I care to even admit or realize. But I had, I'll start here. We talked about this a lot last week. I am having a weird relationship with the overt Western villain Cad Bane of it all, which is not new at all. We know it's in his design. We have an upcoming episode on outfits, a part two. We talk about Cad Bane and the Western feel of it all. I love it. I really love it. I loved it in this episode, but I was like, he might as well have spurs and, you know, ask for a whiskey at the bar. Like, it's, they're laying it on, and I love it. I just have it stands out to me every time more than it ever did.
I was waiting for him to call Omega Pilgrim. Yeah, like John Wayne. Yeah. I think the thing that for me, like, it was almost it was effective, but it was almost a comedy moment, was that sting when he came down the ladder, right?
Yes.
Is that what you're thinking about? Because it was a real Western sting.
Exactly, Mom, which is great. It's a great piece of music. No one get me wrong. I really enjoy it because I enjoy Cad Bane, but we know where it's coming from. But it's rather overt.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like the musical version of Leia's advice that you mentioned of, never be afraid of who you are, of just like Cad Bane in the music. It's like, this is who I am. I'm Western. Space Western.
You know what? I was already sold, but you double sold me. It's Cad Bane. Like, Cad Bane plays it himself. Like one of those people with a boombox or a little speaker on your bike that they're riding through, and you get to hear their music. That's Cad Bane.
Yeah, he's got a lot of weapons and a lot of tech there, and maybe he did just to be extra ominous, play his theme as he came down the ladder.
I like it.
For me, first moment of comedy is I liked that Toto 360 pointing at Omega with his removed leg and using it as a cane, and like obviously upset that his leg was detached, but trying to make the most of it by just using it for things.
There was a great couple of them. You mentioned the pointing that really matched up with Seth Green's voice and performance, and just you felt in his voice that he was doing and another thing, and it really came across in the performance.
Yeah, that one was great. And then also in that general section with Toto, when Omega is manipulating him, there's a ton of great delivery, as there always is from Omega, but the when she's just about sold Toto on letting her out, and she says, "I'm only a kid."
Yeah.
It made me laugh out loud. And then it actually did really work with all of these different nouns that have been used to define her. Right. And
yeah.
And her, I think, thinking of herself and her own growth of that. She is one of them. She is one of the Bad Batch. She is resourceful. She's a good shot. She is a clone. She is a soldier. She is one of them. So thinking in her mind, like, that's what I am, and that's why I'm getting out of here. But I'm going to get you to believe I'm just a kid.
I'm just a girl. Yes. I still think No Doubt's a new band, by the way. That's how I love that. And in that moment, my final big comedy moment, the payoff of Omega powering down Toto was wonderful, because you immediately get a sense of what she might do. And then I've got these pangs of sympathy for Toto, and then she does, and she's sincere and she's good at it, and he's like, whoa, my knee. It was great comedy of just like, it went exactly where you thought it was gonna go, but the path there was the surprise, and that's where a lot of laughter, literal laughter, comes from. You were talking about wonderfully about the conflict of comedy, and a good laugh comes from I didn't expect it to go that way, and I was laughing over my coffee.
Yeah, no, it's very good. And Toto got the, what he should have been expecting.
Yes, right.
Slow down. Yeah, it's comedy that is coming out of, a dark place. And I think, a lot of comedy is the power of it is acknowledging something not great and then getting some joy out of it and some perspective out of it by turning it into a laugh. Yeah. And the fact that Toto won't acknowledge the fact that, like, yeah, this guy that you work for, that you think you're kind of partners with, doesn't care about you. You're so desperate for somebody to literally care for you that you're letting yourself be absolutely hoodwinked, and it becomes a moment of comedy.
Yeah, and a moment of sadness for Toto.
And a moment of sadness. This one was, I didn't laugh out loud, but I just, I had to have it down here as a moment of kind of comedy and whimsy, is Cad Bane yelling at Toto. It had obviously the plot function of figuring out what's going on. But in general, I thought Cad Bane was written just line by line really well. It wasn't, his lines were a little bit more specific. They weren't generic badass. And I liked this line in particular. We said, Toto, get your chassis up here. I can't see anything in this chop. Mm-hmm. it was flavorful and specific and sounded like a bounty hunter who has their own vocabulary. And it also, for me, that line is what really set off this idea of, this is Cad Bane edging past his prime, because he kind of sounds like grumpy old man, right?
Oh, yeah.
He kind of sounds like, get my boot off, treat my bunions.
Right. Right. There's some good surprise laughter from me. I love that you pointed it out, because you know that the asset line early on, where he says is flavorful in its way and wonderfully disrespectful. But later on, does he have line? I didn't write it down, but by hook or by crook or whatever, like
he's emerging from the mist. Yeah. By hook or by crook.
Yeah, now he's telling nursery rhymes here. This is one of the reasons I think Cad Bane is popular. He's got some spice. He's got some flavor to him. Got some sass, and it tells a story that we haven't heard yet of who he is and what he is, and we know him. And again, he might be heading to the retirement home soon. But anyways, I loved all that. I love that you point that out.
Yeah, I would absolutely, even if it was just a fun audio thing, just, you know, Cad Bane yells at Toto in the ship about like their basic, like, is the soup ready, you know, kind of conversations. Mm-hmm. I would love that. Such a great contrast from that great, you know, bad guy drawl that has that space edge with the things that he's saying. I can't see anything in this chop.
Yeah.
Last line of comedy for me is I like when Wrecker jumps the gun when they're trying to locate her, and Wrecker says, "We're coming for you." Yeah. And Echo has to be like, "We don't know where she is yet." Yeah. It doesn't exactly say it that way. It's not that pointed of a joke, but it was sweet and funny of like, Wrecker, the whole point is you can't come for her yet because you don't know where she is.
Oh, Wrecker.
All right, let's get into it. Let's get into moments of canon, lore connections to other stories. Let's start with, I think, the big headline of Boba Fett, right?
Yeah.
Boba Fett is the only other unaltered clone, previously referred to as Alpha, which gives more context to Omega being named Omega. What was your reaction? Did you not want that direct connection between Boba Fett and Omega? Does it make you see Omega differently? Talk me through your feelings.
This has been talked about for a while off air, kind of Discord, emails with friends. It's just there's a lot of wonderful theories, and we always talk the speculate responsibly thing around here. It has great meaning to us, but we have a lot of fun, and you know, that's Palpatine's hairdo. Oh, she took her hair down literally halfway through the first episode. That doesn't work. A lot of things in it there. I really could I hear arguments against this one? Yeah, absolutely. I just was like, well, yeah, we're on Kamino. Django is the prime source of the material and he's not around. This just kind of always tracked, unless they had some real something they were going to pull out of a closet and be, look at this. You didn't even know about this character. It just made sense. And so I wasn't necessarily surprised. It's just, I love what it means, you know?
Yeah. I was not surprised by it. Like I said, I think less reveal and more confirmation, since it seemed like lots of people have been discussing this. Cad Bane's appearance last week made people think of the Cad Bane versus Boba Fett unmade Clone Wars arc.
Right.
So Boba Fett was already on her brain, as he might be anyway, because Kamino, and he's got a show coming out, and Fennec Shand. There's many, many roads of thought lead to Boba Fett. From the discussion that you've seen, because I haven't really seen it, is the concern or the dislike that this is sort of making Omega not her own new character, but now she's Boba Fett's quote unquote sister?
To be honest, I've just skipped through some of the tweet, you know, I haven't taken a deep dive into it, but I think, yeah, around that way, or just the connection again of another character connected. And some, you know, we know some people just don't like Boba Fett as much. And even though, you know, I've always had a
you know, lukewarm opinion of Boba Fett over the years. I do love what they continue to do with Boba Fett and take it, make it more than just a character in a cool costume, and they add those wrinkles and layers. So, as far as Omega, and it, you know, I don't think for me, this is me personally, and definitely not speaking for Joseph here too. It's like Omega is always from something else, right? We always get the sense she was a clone. She was there. So this to me doesn't undercut her. It only kind of confirms how great and special and powerful she might be, all those kind of things. But again, I'm open to any discussions around it. I don't die on a lot of Boba Fett hills. It just seemed like, well, yeah, we're here in Kamino.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there is, for me, a couple of different things. One is always just want to throw out there that we are sharing our opinions, and we celebrate the fact that lots of people have different emotional reactions to storytelling and Star Wars storytelling for different reasons. So totally appreciate that. I also see the hunger for give me a Star Wars story that is really standing on its own, isn't connecting back to any other big name character. Mm-hmm. For myself, my opinion on that was never going to be this show, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe the Bad Batch just like ran away from Kamino and went and had adventures. But it's, to me, the value and the intrigue of this show always was, these are interesting characters to explore more, but the time of the galaxy that they're living in is what's really interesting to explore. So I never had an expectation that Bad Batch wouldn't dive into other characters and other big moments in Star Wars. For me, it was the total opposite of, I was hoping that they would shed light on other known places and characters' experiences in this moment of the Empire taking over. And then for me with Boba Fett, you know, I totally understand any concerns, and I respect them. But I think for my opinion, so far this show, you know, has had so much respect for the character of Omega, I think, in that, like, early on, we had episodes where we made it really clear that not only does she want to be off Kamino exploring the galaxy, she doesn't want to just be taken care of. She wants to be trained. She wants to be a part of the squad. She wants to learn and be a part of something, but stand on her own two feet and not just be kept in the ship and safe. She wants to go out and explore and grow. And the show has respected that, and Bad Batch has respected that, you know, and they don't try to hold her back. They just take her out and they train her. Right. This episode was not about her being rescued. This episode was mostly about the Bad Batch can't do anything until Omega is resourceful and figures it out. So there's nothing in the way this show has been told that would make me feel like the storytelling is going to turn into, this is now the Boba Fett show, and she's defined by Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the relationships potentially for her to explore and choose and want to know. But I feel like Omega is still kind of the main character of this show. And I don't think this relationship is going to change that, is my prediction and hope.
Yeah, I'm with you on that there. Again, we always get what's out there, but I keep saying it all tracks, but just right from the beginning, that's part of some of these questions they ask. And then they answer them right away, but including, you touched on it there, of I'd like to be part of the squad. There was no four episodes of debate. She becomes part of the squad, and she moved, and the story keeps moving. The story keeps going on. So this now, it affects Omega. And right now, does she even know what that is? You know, we'll learn that next. You know, if you're like, you're taken from Django, she might know what that means, but you might have a brother out there. Does she even know what that means? Are they putting that together? You know, I don't know. Does she know who Alpha is? You know? Oh, yeah. You're talking about Alfie, my brother. I don't know. We don't know. And we're going to see where it goes. And I just think they have established her so well as a character that I think it's just now the next chapter of this character.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like the general clones who fought the war, right, really were probably raised, trained to see each other as brothers, but those bonds really grew, right? We see that in great episodes like the Pong Krell arc of they choose to be brothers, right?
Yes.
Even though they have this genetic connection as well and are probably trained that way, it's still also presented as a real active choice based on their life experiences. So I think that, you know, Omega encountering Boba Fett and seeing who he is and seeing if she wants to call him brother, right. You know,
right.
Is an active choice that she gets to make. She gets to make that definition. And I kind of trust that that's where the storytelling will go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do. Yeah. Same. And yeah, I'm not brushing off any problems. And again, I just was swinging through Twitter right when we started press record, and you know, obviously people are going to have hot takes and very valuable opinions on this and how they react to it. So we'll see going forward. I don't think the show, I get why the show in some corners has this, like, what is the surprise guest star that you already know every week? You know, that's happened a few times. I get it. I'm really trusting where they're taking us on this ride.
Yeah, yeah. Do you hope, Ken, that we will see Boba Fett? Where are you sitting with that? Or are you feeling like, great, that's acknowledged, that's connected, but now let's move on?
I can't move away what you were discussing last week. And yeah, you see some of those conversations bubbling up of you could tie it all together if you wanted to. So yeah, Boba Fett showing up. I would be more excited than definitely I would have thought at episode one. And that goes again, same with the Boba. I'm one of those like, oh, Boba Fett's gonna be Mando. Yeah, okay, I guess. And now I'm like, okay, this is you got me. You got me. I mean, hell, Kevin Scott's got me caring about Jackson, I keep saying, and I'm still kind of upset at that. So I would not have wanted Boba Fett in the Clone Wars cartoon, and then that's some of my favorite stuff. So I am very open to it now.
Yeah. I so want Boba Fett to show up in Bad Batch, you know, for a couple reasons. I was always excited about seeing Boba Fett, as you know, because I feel like he has so many unfinished threads of story. And it was so amazing from my Star Wars journey to see him go from the man of unstoppable mystery and cool armor who just fired off your imagination. And then the character evolved and Lucas gave him this different backstory. Where what's fascinating about him is that he's carrying all these different identities: Mandalorian, clone, bounty hunter, man of honor. Looks like maybe either a part of a Tusken Raider group or stole their clothes and equipment like a jerk. We don't know yet. But the point is, this him showing up here is an opportunity to really put under the microscope what it means for him to be a clone. We saw in Mandalorian season two that he certainly didn't like being called kind of just the same as all those clones. Right. That led to a very fun barroom brawl. Mm-hmm. But I feel like his story from the Clone Wars is unresolved of how does he take that next step and put on the armor and become not a clone, not just a kid out for vengeance, but a fully formed bounty hunter. So there's so many things on the table where an interaction with Omega can let us see how he feels a little bit about the clone part of the identity. I really think we're setting the table for Cad Bane getting a little creaky and this generational tale of, well, how does Boba Fett become the legend of being the baddest because he took out the baddest? And for me, I just so trust the way this show has been written that they could do all those things and still keep Omega centered and not just be like, Omega's not in this episode. It's now the Boba Fett show. I just don't think there's any evidence in the way the show has been written and directed so far that would happen. So I feel like there's room to tell this little Boba Fett arc in a way that we're also really learning about Omega, her perspective, her feelings, her decisions.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And yeah, so far so good, right? I trust what's been given to me so far and excited about what's to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was delightful when we finished recording last week to see that many people were on the the team of maybe let's see that standoff those unfinished episodes, that unfinished Cad Bane Boba Fett arc. But yeah, I will throw that out there again just for utter clarity. I'm really interested in all that stuff because I think they can tell the story without making it all about Boba Fett without decentering Omega.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to another Boba Fett question. Ironically. So they make a thing of, obviously, they need Omega because of her genetic material being the more direct sample left of Jango. Do you think the Kaminoans are hunting for Boba Fett now, too?
That is a great question. Yeah, that makes some sense. I hadn't really stopped to think about that. If they're very aware, you know, now tech kind of gives, there's something when tech reads it, I didn't write it down. So there was a, what I kind of felt of like, they're aware Boba's kind of disappeared, you know, maybe feeling he could be dead, could be, but we can't find him. So yeah, if people are aware that he's out there somewhere, that would be an interesting thing as well. Send Dengar to find.
Then Dengar, who Crosshair is not Dengar, right? But there is a connection there visually.
Yeah.
No, I wrote down, this is part of the reason I wanted to say it, is because I feel like Peck needs to dig deeper into his Wikipedia entry, right?
Yes.
Because it seemed to be addressing this like maybe in the moment. Why aren't they hunting Boba Fett right now? He says in his records that Alpha disappeared at the beginning of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, maybe from the perspective of the Kaminoans, you know, he left Kamino, and we know some of the adventures that he had, including being arrested by the Republic for a long period of time. And I'm just like, Tech.
Yeah. Check the record.
Check the tabs. He hasn't been disappearing that well. He's been in a Republic prison.
Tech, make sure you're on the canon tab, not the legend tab.
Exactly. So I'm really curious if that's going to sort of play into it of if they're like, well, we can find Omega or Boba Fett, or if Boba Fett makes some noise, or if the Bad Batch wants to make contact with his Alpha, you know, to figure out his perspective, or, you know, that kind of thing. It might be interesting.
Yeah, no, it would work for me. It's interesting to track, you know, young Boba Fett, where he is in life, and he's got an LLC of Boba Fett Hunting Inc. And he's hitting out, starting his career.
Well, we know that the call is going out for bounty hunters aplenty, right? Because they want, the Kaminoans want her back. So I doubt that they're putting it in their wanted ad of like, you know, we need this genetic material, but there might be rumors, or Boba Fett being a young bounty hunter who gets that call could put two and two together of like, oh, if the Kaminoans want her, they probably want me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He might have some unresolved issues with the folks on Kamino too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Enough Boba Fett talk for now. There'll be more Boba Fett talk down the road, I'm very sure. This was a fun thing to look up, Ken. Cad Bane's ship, Justifier, which replaced his old ship, the Xanadu Blood.
Yeah.
So this was designed for that lost Clone Wars Cad Bane Boba Fett arc. It was revealed in a celebration panel, but this was its actual appearance. So right away, we have some stuff being used from that arc.
See, yeah. You know, this is some Paul McCartney is dead digging into backwards albums and everything. That's a great little note. It's a great little note. I mean, it's also just a fun little like, we had that there and some early designs. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe none of this will happen and that will be it for Boba Fett in this show. And I would be fine with that too. Other canon stuff. How did you feel about the death and or the pronunciation of Ton Wiwe?
Ton Wiwe, I wrote that down as Ton Wiwe, rest in peace. Like, and Rena Owen is credited as the voice, whether it was a new track or something pulled from Attack of the Clones era recordings, I don't know. But I'm not going to get all Ackbar deserved a you know, 4-star general funeral here, 4-star admiral funeral. I was like, wow, oh god, you know, Ton Wiwe's a character that's been around for 20 years in our minds and gone. I had some. You know, a little heartbreak over that.
Didn't even see Ton Wiwe fall. And yes, and she is referred to as Ton Wiwe throughout this episode, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we are we're stuck on Ton Wiwe.
Yes.
Dad, Ton Wee's here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was one of those moments for me that was exactly like you're saying. Ackbar, I think, was even more known and beloved.
Yeah.
But that, like, what? You just killed Ton Wiwe? And then taking that big step back of like, you know, that's a minor character who appears very, very briefly, and not technically super important to the narrative, like, but it's Tan Wei.
It is, yeah.
It's just a great celebration of it only takes a character a little bit of screen time, particularly if we've had some years to live with them, yeah, for them to become important to us.
Yeah, and I'd never want to wade back into the Akbar, what he deserved debates again. I learned my lesson years ago on that, but so I always get it, because I felt that here, but yeah, it was just, you're so right, especially because it's Attack of the Clones, which in 2002, if you're like, Ken, 20 years from now, you're going to feel real sad when Tan Wei is killed. And I'll be like, wait, what do you mean? First of all, what do you mean? There's more Star Wars? Two. How is that possible?
Yeah, but here we are. Here we are, feeling bad for the death of Tan Wei or Tan Wei. I also just wanted to mention, this was another moment of just great line-by-line scripting when Omega says she needs help and Cad Bane says, none you can give.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was some dark, great, specific scripting. Loved it.
Yeah, Cad is good.
I have a couple other things I wrote down here, but I wanted to bat it back to you too and see if there's any canon stuff that you wanted, that you noted, that you wanted to share.
Yeah, other than little details, I wrote the idea of just my real only one was Cad Bane had, quote, multiple run-ins with the Jedi. And I'm like, well, that's a nice way to say it.
he often embarrassed them. He did get captured. Yeah. Yeah, that was great. So watching on my computer, that first close up clone in the vat looked like Solistin to me. Did you pause and study that clone?
I did know what. Yeah, it did. It had whether it actually is or not. It definitely gave me that vibe.
What do you think that is? Like a 9-7, 9-13?
Oh, definitely. Definitely at this point, people are about 9-5. 9-num-5.
At this point in the canon?
Yeah.
Joking. Yeah, I really appreciated that, because when I watched it at midnight on my television, I couldn't quite make it out. And now I'm just on a high VAT alert, right? Of, is there a Snoke in there? Is there a proto Snoke in there? Is there a proto Palpatine in there? And knowing that there's all this great clone storytelling that is making sense. And I feel like we're heading toward the Empire shutting Kamino down and taking their technology, and that funneling into the story of the Mandalorian and the story of Palpatine's survival on Exegol. And
yeah,
I love it. That's all great. But there is also just this like VAT alert. Is that a Snoke in there?
Yeah. Hey, look at it, which is always fun to think, but you know, again, the reveal's got to be important to the character, but it could also layer in the bigger story. And yeah, you can't help but look at a VAT. High VAT alert. That's a great, you coined a great phrase there. Hashtag yeah. High VAT alert.
And I was just happy to see, like, oh, it's just, it's a species that we know in Star Wars, a Solistin, and then having another Kaminoan is just like, we don't know how long it's been since they've used this facility. We don't know if this facility was for doing more secretive stuff. Mm-hmm. But I really just by showing those two different images, neither of which were Snoke or Palpatine,
yeah,
or Plagueis, that it really just said, like, look, they do a lot of cloning. They've done a lot of cloning over the years. We don't know who these people are or what they were trying to do.
Yeah, it's fair. And again, it was so effective for what it meant to Omega, and that reflection shot is so beautiful, but just seeing the sadness and not knowing, like you said, all those questions you just asked, Omega's probably like, is this person even alive in here? Is this what, how long? And then what happened to Fennec? It just drove it all home in a great way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anything else for you?
No, relatively, I want to say canon light. There's some big canon stuff in this, but yeah, that was it for me.
There were, yeah, fewer like, ooh, yeah, we know that from this. Boravio, the planet, and the Leto system, according to Wikipedia, are new. I'm sure it gets said a lot, but it just made me happy to hear Bad Batch saying, we don't have enough information for a direct connection trace, having had to memorize that connection trace line from The Phantom Menace. It was nice to hear.
There you go.
It hit me when Cad Bane said unmarked credits, which was like, okay, well that, yeah, that's, you know, makes perfect sense. But it did make me wonder, is that a more difficult ask now as the Empire is like, hand in your Republic credits for Imperial credits?
Yeah. Exactly. Good point.
My last canon question for you, Ken, is this episode kind of underlines a couple times that, like, well, Fennec Shand is not, her job is finished because Nala Se feels like, well, if Omega's safe with the clones, then that's what I needed you to do, is keep her safe. And it's don't bring her home. But it's underlined that more and more bounty hunters are going to come with that conversation between Omega and Hunter at the end and saying, you know, you can't stop them or fight them all. How do you feel about that? Does that make you excited to be like, ooh, who are we going to see? Or are you feeling the, I don't want the guest of the week?
I don't need the guest of the week. I don't think I've ever needed, but when it's used effectively, I'm there for it. So far, I don't think they've missed in this series. That's my view on it. I was real intrigued that, you know, again, now I said earlier, the jury's out and I'll say, I think her heart is pretty clear. The connection and care is pretty clear for Omega. And so there, you know, there was a little beat in me that's like, she was either going to say, yes, you know what? I do have another job, you know, bring me to her or make sure, keep an eye on her, something like that. So I think Fennec Shand's going to return, whether or not we see, you know, Ara Singh, Tobias Beckett, who knows? Who knows could show up? But I never want just a name. I do want it to have purpose. And I think the chase will still be on.
Yeah. And I would just be happy to see Embo because I love Embo. And it would be great to see Embo in just this high, high level of animation.
Oh, yeah.
would be awesome. So I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind seeing some new ones. And I'm still on Hondo alert, not only VAT alert, Hondo. I think there's a possibility that, not that Hondo is like a bounty hunter, but you know, if he sees an opportunity to make some credits, he's not going to pass it up.
You know, Hondo and Sid have had a drink and hung out.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh, they for sure know each other.
Yeah.
I think Sid in Maz Kanata text back and forth about Hondo.
What's his tab like at your bar?
Not good. Not good. Those Kwakian monkey lizards mess everything up at the bar. Yeah. Was there anything in this episode then, Ken, that you disliked or questioned yourself?
No, I think if you're on board with the idea of the Boba Fett connection, I think this episode probably worked pretty well for you. If you don't, good luck on your podcast and your hot takes, and they're valid because they're your experiences and points of view.
Yep, absolutely. And I think I really have a lot of hope, and I'm very curious to see the way the rest of this show plays out. And I really hope that any revelation about Boba Fett is only going to be there to shed light on the character of Omega. That is my hope, and we will see if I'm right to hang on to hope. Yeah. I think for me, the only thing I didn't dislike, but I literally questioned, and I might have missed something in the background, but I just hope that Omega can be reunited with her crossbow.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I so liked that. That was her bit of identity. And I like this, like, she's slowly being kitted out. She's got this comm that they gave her, which Cad Bane crushed, which was Crosshairs.
Yeah.
So I need to get a new one. So maybe that's the next episode of raising money for Omega's new comm. Yeah. But she had the comm, then she had the crossbow, and there's like, get her some armor. Entire internet is screaming. So like, I don't want to step back on these little bits of building up her identity with her kit.
Yeah, no, I like it. No, I'm okay with the slow process, but yeah, you can at least like some knee pads, some shin guards, something.
Yeah, come on. Get, you know, a Google Glass, something. Just not that Google Glass is armor, but you know what I mean. Anyway, do you have hopes for next episode besides getting Omega armor?
We're talking a lot about Omega, as we should, because this was very much a Omega episode here. But I want the Bad Batch, to me, needs to make a decision what they want to do, where they want to be. Certainly more will come. And I'm not just talking about going with Rex and join the Rebellion. They got a clear purpose with Omega. That's very clear. But, are you still working for Sid? Where are you hiding out? Where are you going back now? And who's coming after you? You can't do the old Mando going to go camp out and, clock out of my duty. You know your duty. You feel it. You know it's about Omega. You know that's kind of your main purpose as a team. But I really want them to start making solid decisions about who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this episode ended with that great moment of promising to be with Omega, right? Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't take it as far as, you know, saying, I will always keep you safe. You know, he Omega seems to have that fear of like, well, you're vulnerable too. You know, you got shot. You're talking to me with a big bandage on, Hunter.
Yeah.
But he does make that promise of like, you know, we are in this together. You have us. You don't need to worry. and you will never have to go back to Kamino. And it really feels like, okay, Hunter, how are you going to fulfill those promises? And it really does feel like this sort of like, should we just work for Cid or not? Tension has got to give, right? And, you know, what options are they? Are there, you know, could they seek out the rebels not because they believe in fighting the Empire, but because they want help hiding, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Could they seek out this Alpha to see if he has more knowledge about his past or her past, you know, to give her a sense of where to go next? But I am right there with you. I kind of want the next episode to be at some point a little bit more of a definitive decision from Hunter / the rest of the squad of,
yeah,
if our mission is to keep this kid safe and let her become the person she wants to be, how are we going to do that?
Yeah. It's not that Hunter's got a bunch of blank stares going, you know, he's got a clear idea, but you know, sometimes you get that feeling where he's just kind of still going, what should we do now? And I'm just like, do it, Hunter, go forward, make a decision. I think you lost Omega. You got her back, thankfully, and a lot to do with her. So, you know, if you made that promise to her, how are you going to keep it?
Yeah, exactly. How are you going to keep, hopefully the next episode will be called Hunter's Promise. I do know somebody did tweet us that the episode names were put out somewhere on a Disney release. I personally am not going to look at them because I feel like they can be quite revealing, and I'm enjoying the mystery for myself.
Yeah. Same with that on that.
Yeah. So if next episode is called Hunter's Decision, that will be a surprise to us.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on, Ken?
No, sir. Big, wonderful emotional episode and haunting in it. It was really effective.
Haunting. Yes. The only thing I wrote down is Fog is the MVP of this episode.
It truly is.
All right. We always wrap up with a fun question. Ken, if you could have an action figure or any other toy inspired by this episode, what do you want?
I don't mean to step on your toes here, Joseph, but I'm going with two-pack options. All right.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah. I got the Cad Bane versus Fennec Shand punch 'em up 2-pack, or maybe headbutt it up 2-pack. And then we don't see it in this episode, but I do want the Alpha and Omega family reunion 2-pack.
That is great. I would buy both of those immediately. This isn't necessarily a 2-pack because I don't think Toto would get a full billing there. But I would love a battle damage Cad Bane and Toto 360 where they're both beat up from the events of this episode. I love that big scratch on Toto's head from Fennec throwing crap at him.
Absolutely.
But Cad Bane with painful back.
Yeah.
In Toto 360 with a pointing leg that's fallen off would be great. Then the other toy, sometimes they make these, Ken, of the love affair that sometimes toy makers have with goo, right?
Yes.
I would love a little playset of clone vats that come with green goo, and then they come with a couple, but you can buy more of just naked Star Wars alien action figures.
All kind of like rubbery and dangly.
yeah. And, you know, action figure doll tradition, you know, nice and mysterious in different zones of the body. I don't want anything too articulated, you know. I don't want to get gross. I just want naked Star Wars action figures to put in green goo. Besides that, I don't want to get gross.
Yeah, love that. Oh, that's great.
So there you go. Some toys that are probably not going to be at a toy store near you soon at all. With that, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Oh, man, I'd love to, my friends. Thanks for listening to our Bad Batch Report. We know this brings in some ears that are either new to the show or don't listen regularly. We love having you on here. We are here 3 to 4 times a week. You can find us on Twitter at 4CenterPod. We are on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is 4CenterPodcast. You can get merch, including that Speculate Responsibly t-shirt at tpublic.com/user/4Center. Want to listen to a Star Wars book? Get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. We are available on a lot of different spots, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the normal spots, but don't forget to check out Spotify, Amazon Music as well. And then you can support us directly at patreon.com/4Center. I just reloaded. We got some new stock in the top tier support. You support us there. You get exclusive
Four Center Trading Cards. Me, Joseph, and Jennifer Landa. Great trading cards designed by the wonderful Brian Ward. You can follow me at Cadnapsuck. Go to my website, cadnapsuck.com. Follow us over at the GPA, the Good People Association of the GPA.fun. Joseph.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. Over on TikTok, I am sharing some action figures that I refuse to open, but I absolutely love them, and I appreciate people who open their toys. I'm having a ton of fun just spending quality time with my action figures and getting to share it with people on TikTok. If you're interested in any of my other comedy adventures, you can go to my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Fog itself, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.